Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 927. The Truppenkampf Verbande Part 6, Locker Room Eclipse. This is being recorded on October 13th of the year 2016. Here in this fascinating presidential election year, we are going to do another program about what I have constructed as the Truppenkampfverbande. That's actually a made-up term. Kampfverbande is a suffix that has been applied to German infantry units, and obviously Truppen is a reference to Donald Trump. We've done 5 shows explicitly about Trump before, the Truppenkampfverbande parts 1 through 5, as well as For the Record 882 and 894. And it is, I think, time to add another program covering some of the very important but not exactly suppressed but eclipsed aspects of the Trump campaign. Now, I've subtitled this program Locker Room Eclipse because many of the really important aspects of Donald Trump's campaign, including the fact that he basically is a Nazi to all appearances, and beyond that is manifesting a Nazi heritage. His father may very well have been in the Klan, and he has brought up many aspects of past and or present Nazi culture in his business dealings, personal associations, and campaign, ranging from his resuscitation of the America First slogan. That was a German intelligence isolationist group that arose prior to World War II, to his use of former Axis spy Norman Vincent Peale as his personal pastor, his using various what has been euphemized as alt-right slogans and tweets and personnel in his campaign. These are very important things, and we are going to be taking a look at the Truppenkampfverbande, something that I have stated is at a domestic political level the emergence of the underground Reich into plain view. At some point, the behind-the-scenes power elite located underground Reich, rooted in corporate and national security elements, for it to ultimately triumph and overtly triumph, it has to become a mass political movement. That is at one level what I think the Trump campaign, or the Truppenkampfverbande, as I have termed it, is. It also, at an international level, is going to do incomparable and irreversible damage to this country, including and especially to what, for lack of a better term, might be called brand America. Trump, at a certain level, is presiding over the Caligulization of America. He is, of course, not only fundamentally dishonest and reverses himself more than the polarities on an electric motor, but he is, of course, also an inveterate liar as well as vulgar. But what people are failing to grasp is that he has a lot of support. That support is not only not going to go away, but it is very likely to engage in violence as Election Day draws closer. And in particular, it would not surprise me one bit to see a wave of leaderless resistance, terrorism, and murder in the wake of a Donald Trump defeat, if in fact he does lose. Ultimately, I think that Germany, both with its better public relations and somewhat more stable leadership meme or leadership capacity, and also a Germany that is solidifying its economic control over the continent of Europe and is in the process of building support for a German-led all-EU army, will assume leadership of what is mistakenly viewed as the free world. In for the record, 9/18 and 9/19, the Trump and Contrabande parts 1 and 2, German Ostpolitik parts 1 and 2. I noted that Germany is moving more toward a leadership role in the world. And ultimately, I expect that the combination of American military and political and diplomatic belligerence over Ukraine and Syria and the possibility of nuclear war and Realpolitik, German Ostpolitik on the part of Angela Merkel and others will lead to some concessions by Russia. This in the context of the bidding war that I believe the Trump campaign represents, very much like the Burger Zeitung article from 1949 that I alluded to, that I read into the record in, for the record, 9/18 and alluded to at length in 9/19. I think you are going to see not only Germany assume leadership of the so-called free world, but I think that Russia will permit the further submission of Ukraine to EU control, perhaps even formal admission of Ukraine to EU control, if in fact the Lisbon to Vladivostok economic union that is already being discussed is allowed to come into being. This would cement Russia's Eurasian economic union into the EU, and again would create an economic union stretching from Lisbon to Vladivostok. And I think that NATO, with its nuclear forces, would be replaced by an EU army. And Russia will, I suspect, grant, will give the nod to that rather than have nuclear war. We will see. But that is ultimately where I think things are going to go. The title, Locker Room Eclipse, alludes to the, quote, locker room talk, unquote, that Donald Trump engaged in the by now famous tape that was recorded in 2005. I would note in passing that Trump was not only mic'd up, he was talking to a guy named Billy Bush, who was the candidate, the cousin, I should say, of George W. Bush, the seated president of the U.S. at that point in time, and the man for whose father CIA headquarters is named. The recent debate and much of the political discourse since that tape emerged roughly a week ago has focused on the locker room banter that Trump engaged in, referring, basically claiming just reach out and grab her by the P word, she'll love it, etc., etc. It is really not all that surprising that Donald Trump would engage in banter of that type, given his track record. However, I think that the furor, pun intended, over that locker room talk has eclipsed some much more important aspects of the Trump campaign and Donald Trump personally, and those are of much, much greater import than his exhortations to reach out and grab a woman by the P word, as distasteful as that is. We're going to take a look at the Trump and Contrabande, and I mean that quite literally, the Nazi phenomenon that is the Trump campaign. And we're not only going to take a look at what this phenomenon is likely to be going forward, but some of the more important aspects of it that have not received much discussion. There has been a lot of volatility in the equities markets recently. Some of that due to worries over Deutsche Bank. That is Germany's largest bank. And it is, as we looked at in several of the programs about the Trump and Confirmanda, including, for the record, 921 and 922. It is, the Deutsche Bank, that is inextricably linked with the Bormann Group. Beyond that, it is Deutsche Bank that has been the go-to lender, so to speak, for Donald Trump in the past, having made billions of dollars lending money to various Trump real estate projects. It was the cavalier behavior of Deutsche Bank, along with other fellow too-big-to-fail institutions, too big to fail, but not too big to hile, I guess you could say, about Deutsche Bank, that placed it among the institutions that was threatening to destroy the global economy. And there has been a lot of worry about Deutsche Bank, particularly in light of speculation that the U.S. Justice Department was going to hit it with a $14 billion fine. And the fact that on the one hand we have a major party political candidate who is hundreds of millions of dollars in hock to a too-big-to-fail institution that may be in danger of failing and bringing down the global economy if it does, on the one hand, and also a major party presidential candidate who in characteristic Trumpian fashion has flip-flopped on the Federal Reserve. He has at times said good things about Janet Yellen and is also saying bad things about her. At one point he says he's a low-interest rate kind of guy. Now he has changed that and he has threatened to fire Janet Yellen and to replace her. He also has made noises about raising interest rates. That also is a very significant form of rhetorical behavior for Trump to engage in, precisely as the possibility of a Deutsche Bank collapse or a Deutsche Bank bailout to prevent a collapse is very much in the winds, so to speak. However, we're not hearing about that. We're just hearing about, you know, reach out and grab her by the P word kind of stuff, which, again, as distasteful as it is, should come as no surprise to anyone familiar with Donald Trump. And beyond that, or Trump, or really the successors to Donald Trump are threatening to do is to reach out and grab the Statue of Liberty by the P word. So let's take a look at what we are not hearing about, what has been eclipsed by all of the furor, pun intended, over Donald Trump's locker room banter. Donald Trump, not surprisingly, is a believer in eugenics. That is the social theory, I should say, that was the foundation of Nazi racial policy, and that was something that had great acceptance in many of the power elite circles around the world that elevated Hitler to power and or were sympathetic to him. Eugenics was very prominent in the U.S. as well and continues to wield a lot of influence, although in things through things like the Pioneer Fund, which has been in the forefront of harsh immigration legislation, something that the Trump campaign, of course, has made a signature element. Donald Trump, again, not surprisingly, is a believer in eugenics and superior heredity. An article by Carolyn Mortimer, M-O-R-T-I-M-E-R, from the Independent of the UK of September 30th of 2016. Donald Trump believes he has superior genes, biographer claims, reading in part. Donald Trump has been accused of believing in the racehorse theory of genetics, which claims some people are genetically superior to others. In an interview for U.S. TV channel PBS, the presidential nominee's biographer Michael D'Antonio claimed the candidate's father, Fred Trump, had taught him that the family's success was genetic. He said, quote, "The family subscribes to a racehorse theory of human development. They believe that there are superior people and that if you put together the genes of a superior woman and a superior man, you get a superior offspring," unquote. The theory known as eugenics first emerged during the 19th century and was used as a pretext for the sterilization of disabled people until the practice was discredited after the Second World War. Adolf Hitler's justification for the Holocaust, in which 11 million people were killed, 6 million of them Jewish, was based on a similar theory of racial hierarchy. Well, again, eugenics, about which we have spoken at great length in the past, was one of the foundations of Nazi racial theory. And like fascism itself, eugenics had widespread acceptance in the world's power elites, including and especially here in the U.S.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at SpitfireList.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Trump has made his harsh immigration policies anti-Mexican and anti-Muslim, among other things, one of the signature elements of his campaign. That is one of the things that has drawn the, quote, alt-right, unquote, to him. And eugenics organizations like the Pioneer Fund have been deeply involved with drafting harsh immigration legislation, noting that Fred Trump, from whom Donald apparently gets his racehorse theory of genetics, has been a major influence in Trump's life. His business life, his business career, I should say, has drawn on financing given to him by Fred Trump, his father, to a large extent. And in general, Fred Trump appears to have exerted influence on Donald. From After the Gold Rush by Marie Brenner from Vanity Fair of September of 1990, we've read this before, Donald Trump appears to take aspects of his German background seriously. A relative of his, John Walter, works for the Trump Organization, and when he visits Donald in his office, Ivana told a friend, he clicks his heels and says, "Heil Hitler," possibly as a family joke. Skipping down. Ivana Trump told her lawyer, Michael Kennedy, that from time to time her husband reads a book of Hitler's collected speeches, My New Order, which he keeps in a cabinet by his bed. And again, I don't think it's a family joke at all. I think this is exactly what they believe, and I think that the heritage of Donald Trump tracks back to the pro-Nazi and pan-Germanist fifth column in this country, of which the Steuben Society was a part. We talked about the Steuben Society in connection with the open letter to Stalin in the Burger Zeitung, and For the Record's 918 and 919. It may very well be that Donald Trump's father, Fred, was in the Ku Klux Klan. Certainly, his father was arrested at a 1927 Klan rally in New York. From Vice News of March 9th of 2016, article by Mike Pearl, P-E-A-R-L, all the evidence we could find about Fred Trump's alleged involvement with the KKK, and nothing asked if his father had lived at 17524 Devonshire Road, the address listed for the Fred Trump arrested at the 1927 Klan rally. Donald dismissed the claim as totally false, unquote. Skipping down. Biographical records confirm, however, that the Trump family did live on Wareham Place in Queens in the 1940s when Donald was a kid. But according to at least one archived newspaper clip, Fred Trump also lived at 175-24 Devonshire Road. A wedding announcement in the January 22, 1936 issue of the Long Island Daily press, places Fred Trump at that address, and refers to his wife as Mary McLeod, M-A-C-L-E-O-D, which is Donald Trump's mother's maiden name. So I think it appears clear that Fred Trump, who gave Donald his racehorse theory of genetics, his eugenics outlook, was arrested at that Klan rally. Whether he was a bystander or whatever remains to be determined and will probably never be appropriately determined. In addition to the significance of Donald Trump's eugenics outlook and apparent eugenics heritage, he gets it from his father, according to his biographer, there is another aspect of Donald Trump's outlook on genes and heredity that we need to take note of. Not just that Donald Trump's immigration policies dovetail with the outlook being presented by organizations like the Pioneer Fund, but also the fact that part of Donald Trump's, quote, superior, unquote, heredity, his son, Donald Trump Jr., not only has political aspirations, but has been apparently sharing Donald Trump's, quote, alt-right slash Nazi white supremacist point of view. Certainly Donald Trump Jr. has been deeply involved with tweeting white supremacist slash alt-right memes. From the Raw Story blog of September 20th, 2016, by Travis, T-R-A-V-I-S, Gettys, G-E-T-T-Y-S, Trump Jr.'s Skittles tweet is based on two different white supremacist memes and Nazi propaganda. What this is about is a tweet by Donald Trump Jr., who, after the bombings in New York City and New Jersey, compared Syrian refugees to poisoned Skittles. And this is an evolution of a long-standing white supremacist meme or image of black people as poisoned M&Ms. And it also borrows on white supremacist tweeting about Trayvon Martin, who was killed by George Zimmerman. He had been, Trayvon Martin, that is, had gone to pick up a soft drink and some Skittles, and that then became the use of Skittles candy became a feature of white supremacist propaganda after that. And what this also notes is that the image of poisoned Skittles is an adaptation of an anti-Semitic image that was disseminated by Nazi propagandist Julius Streicher, S-T-R-E-I-C-H-E-R, in which he compared Jews to poisonous mushrooms. Travis Gettys about this synthesis of white supremacist and Nazi themes. Donald Trump Jr., parenthetically part of the racehorse theory of genetics, the superior genes that Donald Trump believes he has. Beginning again, Donald Trump Jr. drew widespread condemnation for comparing Syrian refugees to poisoned candy, but his analogy isn't a new one, and it's based on two separate white supremacist memes with roots in Nazi propaganda. Trump, the Republican presidential candidate's eldest son and a top campaign surrogate, tweeted the image Monday evening in an apparent response to the dumpster bombing over the weekend in New York City, which his dad ineptly linked to the refugee crisis. "This image says it all," reads the text. "Let's end the politically correct agenda that doesn't put America first. Hashtag Trump 2016, accompanied by the official Donald Trump, Mike Pence campaign logo and slogan. The analogy isn't new and has been used for years by white supremacists to overgeneralize about various minority groups." Skipping down. "The analogy, which has been used on message boards and shared as social media memes, originally used M&Ms as the candy in question, but that changed after George Zimmerman gunned down Trayvon Martin while the unarmed black teen was walking home from buying a drink and some Skittles. A Google image search of Skittles Trayvon meme reveals a horrible bounty of captioned images mocking the slain teenager, whose killer was acquitted after claiming self-defense under Florida's Stand Your Ground law. But the poisoned candy analogy goes back even further to an anti-Semitic children's book published by Julius Streicher, the publisher of the Nazi newspaper Der Stürmer, who was executed in 1946 as a war criminal. Just as poisonous mushrooms spring up everywhere, so the Jew is found in every country in the world, the story's mother explains to her son. Just as poisonous mushrooms often lead to the most dreadful calamity, so too the Jew is the cause of misery and distress, illness and death. More about Donald Trump tweeting or retweeting alt-right or white and or white supremacist anti-Semitic memes, something we spoke about at considerable length and for the record 920. Trump ally and son share meme featuring symbol of white nationalist alt-right by Allegra Kirkland from Talking Points memo Livewire from September 12th of 2016. By the way, the ally here is Roger Stone, who is in direct contact with Julian Assange. And I have to say, I told you so. While everybody has been oohing and aahing and the so-called progressive sector oozing all over Julian Assange, I have been pointing out that Assange and those around him have fascist slash far-right views and connections. And now the WikiLeaks operation has emerged as more or less the unofficial online dirty tricks aspect of the Trump campaign. Again, from Talking Points memo Livewire from September 12th of 2016, Trump ally and son share meme featuring symbol of white nationalist alt-right. Two members of Donald Trump's inner circle shared memes on social media over the weekend featuring a symbol popular with the white nationalist alt-right. Riffing off of Hillary Clinton's remark that some of Trump's supporters are racists, misogynists, and xenophobes who belong in a, quote, basket of deplorables, unquote, the meme shared by Donald Trump Jr. and Trump ally Roger Stone showed key Trump allies photoshopped onto a poster from the movie The Expendables. In the edited poster for The Deplorables, those armed staffers and Trump boosters are shown alongside Pepe the Frog, a cartoon figure that first cropped up on the 4chan website and has since become associated with the white supremacist movement online. Trump Indiana Governor Mike Pence, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, Ben Carson, conspiracy theorist and 911 truther Alex Jones, and alt-right figurehead Milo Yiannopoulos are among those included in the image. Apparently, I made the cut as one of the deplorables, unquote, Trump Jr. wrote on Instagram in a caption accompanying the meme, saying he was, quote, honored, unquote, to be grouped among Trump's supporters. Informal Trump advisor Roger Stone shared the same image on Twitter, saying he was, quote, so proud to be one of the deplorables. One of the things that, again, has been eclipsed by Donald Trump's locker room talk, and that may very well be one of the more lasting and scary aspects of Trump's political heritage, is that one of the bearers of his superior genes, the very Donald Trump Jr. we're talking about, has political aspirations. More about that in just a second. I will also note that it does not appear that Donald Trump Jr. is as unself-conscious about matters gender and sexual as his father. Therefore, the public meltdowns of Donald Trump over his behavior toward women and or rhetoric about women aren't likely to be continued by Donald Trump Jr. But Donald Trump Jr. will, in all probability, carry forward the oblique Nazi slash white supremacist slash alt-right dynamics of the Donald. From the Hullabaloo blog of September 21st of 2016, a chip off the old block by Digby, D-I-G-B-Y, skipping down. When Donald Trump Jr. spoke to white supremacist radio host in March, it set off a few alarm bells simply because his father's extreme immigration policies had been so ecstatically received by white nationalist groups. But most chalked it up to inexperience and let it go. Surely Jr. wasn't as crudely racist as the old man who was reported to keep a book of Hitler's speeches next to the bed. But just a few days later, Donald Jr. retweeted a racist science fiction writer named Theodore Beale, who goes by the handle of Vox Bay, claiming that a famous picture of a Trump supporter giving a Nazi salute was actually a follower of Bernie Sanders. The apple didn't fall far from the tree after all, skipping down. Indeed, one wouldn't expect that, given Donald Trump's racehorse theory on heredity. Right after the convention, however, he let out a deafening dog whistle that left no doubt as to his personal affiliation with the far right. Donald Jr. went to the Neshoba County Fair in Philadelphia, Mississippi, best remembered as the place where three civil rights workers were murdered in 1964. But it has special political significance as the site of Ronald Reagan's famous states' rights speech in 1980, where he signaled his sympathy for white supremacy by delivering it at the scene of that horrendous racist crime. The man who coined the term welfare queen was always a champion dog whistler. Trump Jr. went there to represent, and represent he did. When asked what he thought about the Confederate flag, he said, quote, "I believe in tradition. I don't see a lot of the nonsense that's been created about that." Since then, it's been revealed that he follows a number of white nationalists on Twitter, and he's retweeted several, including a psychologist who believes Jews manipulate society. And in the last couple of weeks, Jr. has let his alt-right freak flag fly. And that is noteworthy because Donald Jr., who again does not apparently have the locker room reach out and grab her by the P-word Achilles heel that his father has, does have political aspirations. So as you contemplate the Trumpenkampf Verbande, contemplate this. What it is the transformation of the underground Reich, or what I have termed the underground Reich and the forces that have generated it, into an above-ground mass political movement. And it is that overground mass political movement that may very well be championed by or will group around Donald Trump Jr. Or it will group around someone else. But certainly Donald Trump Jr. will appear to be in the mix.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
This from Salon of July 20th of 2016, an article by Sophia Tesfaye, T-E-S-F-A-Y-E, I may be mispronouncing that. Yikes. Now Donald Trump Jr. says he would, quote, love, unquote, to run for office, quote, as a patriot, unquote. After his questionable speech to the RNC, Donald Trump Jr. said he would consider, unquote, running once his kids finish school. calling it, quote, one of the most thrilling moments of my life, unquote. Donald Trump Jr. brushed aside burgeoning controversy surrounding the second Trump family speech at the RNC in as many days while speaking with the Wall Street Journal Wednesday morning. The oldest son of the Republican presidential nominee said that while he still has, quote, a lot to do in my own career, unquote, he would seriously consider following in his father's footsteps out of real estate and into the political life. The 38-year-old New Yorker said that, quote, maybe when the kids get out of school, I would consider it, unquote. The father of five explained that he, quote, loved to be able to do it as a patriot, unquote. There has been much focus, and appropriately so, on the Bush family dynasty. We may be witnessing with the Trumpenkampfverbande, with the underground Reich transforming into an overground mass-based political movement, we may very well be looking at the minting of another political dynasty, the Trump dynasty, manifesting the superior, unquote, racehorse genetics that Donald Trump claims he got from his possibly Ku Klux Klan adhering father. Certainly, Trump's father, like Donald himself, was a racist, and in fact, folk singer Woody Guthrie actually wrote about Fred Trump and his racism. Now, among the things that have been eclipsed by all of the doozy words that Donald Trump has used, and the rhetorical firestorm about that, is that there are some very serious things in play. Not just the fact that we have an overt Nazi running for president. In fact, the Republican Party has a long-standing affiliation with Third Reich alumni going back to the Crusade for Freedom in 1948, involving all the way through the Reagan administrations. The Bush family itself appears to be, as I have opined in numerous programs, one of the major catpaws of the Bormann Flight Capital Organization in the United States. There has been a lot of volatility in some of the equities markets around the world in recent weeks, in part because of worries about the financial health of Deutsche Bank, as discussed in For the Records 921 and 922. The Deutsche Bank is not only Germany's largest lender, but also is profoundly involved with the Bormann Capital Network and was deeply involved with the Third Reich. And I'm not going to excerpt it at any length, but the Wall Street Journal of March 20th of 2016 had an article by Anupreta, A-N-U-P-R-E-E-T-A, Das, D-A-S, as in Sam. When Donald Trump needs a loan, he chooses Deutsche Bank. And this talks about the fact that the primary financial backer of Donald Trump's real estate ventures has been Deutsche Bank. Skipping down. Since 1998, the bank has led or participated in loans of at least $2.5 billion to companies affiliated with Mr. Trump, according to a Wall Street Journal analysis of public records and people familiar with the matter. That doesn't include at least another $1 billion in loan commitments that Deutsche Bank made to Trump-affiliated entities. That long-standing connection makes Frankfurt-based Deutsche Bank, which has a large U.S. operation and has been grappling with reputational problems and an almost 50% stock price decline, parenthetically, that's one of the things that helped to spur the market volatility, continuing, the financial institution with probably the strongest ties to the controversial New York businessman. This is from March 20th. Now, of course, he is the GOP presidential nominee. Again, some $3.5 billion in loans to Trump operations or Trump-related entities. One of the things that we spoke about in For the Record 920 and others is the fact that Trump's business operations are very opaque. So how many individuals and institutions are involved with them is past the point of matter of speculation. However, Mother Jones Magazine of June 1st of 2016 has an article, Trump has a conflict of interest problem no other White House candidate ever had, by Russ Choma, C-H-O-M-A, and David Korn. And this, again, eclipsed by Trump and his locker room talk, just reach out and grab her by the P-word. In his most recent financial disclosure statement, Donald Trump notes he has billions of dollars in assets. But the presumptive GOP nominee also has a tremendous load of debt that includes five loans of over $50 million. Two of those mega loans are held by Deutsche Bank, which is based in Germany but has U.S. subsidiaries. And this prompts a question that no other major American presidential candidate has had to face. What are the implications of the chief executive of the U.S. government being in hock for $100 million or more to a foreign entity that has tried to evade laws aimed at curtailing risky financial shenanigans, that was recently caught manipulating markets around the world, and that attempts to influence the U.S. government? More about Deutsche Bank from the New York Times of September 30th, 2016. An article by Peter S. Goodman. Deutsche Bank troubles, fears of global shock. I believe there's a word in this. Deutsche Bank troubles trigger fears of global shock. Germany's largest bank appears in danger, sending global markets worldwide on a wild ride. Yet the biggest source of worry is less about its finances than a vast tangle of unknowns, not least whether Europe can muster the will to mount a rescue in the event of an emergency. Skipping down. Deutsche Bank is staring at a multi-billion-dollar fine from the Justice Department for its enthusiastic participation in Wall Street's festival of toxic mortgage products in the years leading up to the financial crisis of 2008. Given Deutsche's myriad other troubles, a role in the manipulation of a financial benchmark, claims of trades that violated Russian sanctions, and a generalized sense of confusion about its mission, the American pursuit of a stiff penalty comes in at an inopportune time. Skipping down, the European Union has become a focus of populist anger, further constraining options with regard to Deutsche Bank. And Germany has opposed bailouts for lenders in other lands, making a Deutsche rescue politically radioactive, all of which adds to worries that Deutsche amounts to a fire burning, one that might yet become an inferno, while the fire department is consumed with existential arguments over its purpose. If the alarm sounds, no one can be sure what, if anything, will happen. Skipping down. The biggest form of insurance against panic is confidence that larger players, in this case European authorities, stand at the ready to mount a rescue should one be required. But confidence is not something Europe has proved terribly skilled at instilling. Its inabilities to marshal a bailout are dubious. New rules introduced to discourage reckless investments by large financial institutions bar taxpayer-financed bailouts. Germany has been adamant that these strictures be applied, rebuffing a recent attempt by the Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi to secure an exemption allowing him to inject taxpayer money into the Italian banking system. The optics of Germany seeking a way around the rules for its largest lender would be especially problematic. Skipping down again. Against this backdrop, a German bailout of its largest bank would reinvigorate accusations that it uses the European Union as a cover to pursue its own national interests. And again, I think that speaks for itself. It remains to be seen what happens with Deutsche Bank.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
More about Deutsche Bank, the New York Times of October 2nd of 2016. Deutsche Bank's appetite for risk throws off its balance, by Landon Thomas Jr. The global banking giants, think of J.P. Morgan Chase or HSBC, make a nice return by capturing their share of the trillions of dollars that course through financial markets each day. But few are as reliant on this business, be it swapping currencies, selling bonds, or structuring derivatives as Deutsche Bank, the giant lender that has made its name not as a home for German savers, but as a place for hedge funds and other risk-loving investors to put on some of their boldest financial bets. And by financial bets, excuse me, Freudian slip, financial bets. And that is why its swooning stock price last week set off alarm bells in finance ministries, central bank suites, and trading floors from Hong Kong to New York. More than 8 years after the collapse at Lehman Brothers sent shockwaves around the world, the fear is whether Deutsche Bank and its highly leveraged balance sheet of 1.6 trillion euros might peter and set off another bout of financial contagion. These worries calmed down somewhat late last week as Deutsche Bank's shares rose after reports that the bank may be close to cutting a deal with the U.S. Justice Department regarding the fine it must pay for selling toxic mortgages during the financial crisis. It has 220 billion euros or $247 billion in ready liquidity, compared with 45 billion for Lehman in 2007. And the bank, note this, and the bank can also tap central banks in the U.S. and in Europe for a financial lifeline if need be. By the way, Deutsche Bank actually got a taxpayer bailout after the last financial crisis. And big the next concept here. That does not mean, however, that traders and regulators will stop fretting about, among other things, the 42 trillion euro worth of derivatives that sit on Deutsche Bank's books, an amount about 11 times the size of the German economy. That's the sum of specie meatball there, boy. This last one again. That does not mean, however, that the traders and regulators will stop fretting about, among other things, the 42 trillion euros worth of derivatives that sit on Deutsche Bank's books, an amount about 11 times the size of the German economy. And again, this is a financial institution that is wavering. If you talk about too big to fail, and there has been some discussion of a bailout, Germany has put the kibosh on that. It remains to be seen what happened, and there is doubt. From the Financial Times of October 11th of 2016, an article by Laura Noonan, N-O-O-N-A-N, and Carolyn Binham, B-I-N-H-A-N, and James Schotter, S-H-O-T-T-E-R. Deutsche received special treatment in EU stress tests via ECB concession. It reads in part, Deutsche Bank was given special treatment in the summer EU stress tests that promised to restore faith in Europe's banks by assessing all of their finances in the same way. Germany's biggest lender, which has seen its share price fall by as much as 22% in recent weeks on fears that it could face a U.S. fine of up to $14 billion, has been using the results of the July stress tests as evidence of its healthy finances. But the Financial Times has learned that Deutsche's result was boosted by a special concession agreed by its supervisor, the European Central Bank. Skipping down. This treatment is perplexing, said Chris Wheeler, an analyst at Atlantic Equities. The circumstances mean that it is inevitable the market watchers will be suspicious and have concern about the veracity of the results. And again, no discussion of not only the potential implications of a Deutsche Bank collapse, this in the presidential campaign, but of the ways in which this impinges directly on Donald Trump's candidacy. Again, it has been that very same Deutsche Bank inextricably linked with the Bormann Capital Network, and before that, the Third Reich in its overground phase. The fact that it has been Donald Trump's go-to bank for his business ventures, the fact that he owes upwards of $100 million to that bank, the fact that it has been speculated about as possibly collapsing. There have been reassuring statements made in the press. But in fact, the European Central Bank's stress test was deliberately altered for Deutsche Bank, which has an amount of derivatives on its books that is 11 times the size of the German economy. Some of this is just unbelievable. And yet we're not hearing about this. And we should also note that Donald Trump and his alt-right supporters have some interesting views about the central bank. From the New Yorker magazine of July 15th of 2016 by Adam Davidson, Trump and the Truth, the interest rate flip-flop, skipping down. This week, Trump was back on the attack. On Monday, he told CNBC that Fed Chair Janet Yellen should be ashamed of the low interest rate policy that Trump himself fully endorsed in May. She's obviously political and she's doing what Obama wants her to do, he said. Once again, Trump made the claim that there was a secret Obama-Yellen pact to keep rates low, rooted in their nefarious desire to prevent an economic crisis. They both knew, he said, that as soon as rates go up, the stock market is going to go way down. And again, note the flip-flopping. Trump at one point was pro-low interest rate and at one point had some benign comments about Janet Yellen, but he has completely flip-flopped on that, now attacking Yellen, saying he will replace her and making statements about the Federal Reserve being in Obama's pocket. And I will also note that his supporters are big fans of a return to the gold standard. Now, with attacking Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve and with an advocacy of return to the gold standard, Donald Trump is at one with Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, the peach fuzz fascist. And then for the records, 9/17, 9/23, and 9/24, we took a look at WikiLeaks and Team Snowden. There are links to the high-profile hacks, which do not appear to have come from Russia. And I have noted that the, quote, alt-right, unquote, political forces embodied in Donald Trump are precisely the same right political forces that are embodied in Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden and WikiLeaks. Skipping down in this New Yorker article. Trump's economic advisors can for the most part be located in one of three groups. The first are Larry Kudlow and Judy Shelton, the intellectuals of the bunch and both advocates of a return to the gold standard. While it has become popular among some Republicans in the past few years, returning to the gold standard is dismissed as a discredited fringe idea by nearly all economists and market participants. And for their part, gold standard supporters typically reject the very idea of a Federal Reserve Bank, so if Trump were to appoint Kudlow, Shelton, or another gold standard supporter to the Fed, it would be the most radical and potentially damaging economic move since the dawn of our modern economic system after the Great Depression. Skipping down, the second group of Trump advisors is famously made up of business people, all those Steves, Feinberg, Mnuchin, Roth, Kalk, and the others who come from real estate and finance. As a group, they, like Trump, had not expressed great knowledge of or interest in monetary policy. Finally, there's the group represented by Stephen Bannon, the former Goldman Sachs banker and Breitbart news chief now heading Trump's campaign. Bannon has not talked much publicly about his views of the Fed, but his deep association with the alt-right is worth examining. Some on the alt-right have expressed contempt for the very idea of a healthy economy, skipping down. Reading these passages helps me understand something that I had previously found confusing. In reading stories on Breitbart and other sites connected to the awful alt-right movement that Trump has embraced, I found it impossible to identify any overarching view of how the economy should work. There were sloppy and occasional pot shots at Obama or Yellen, and a general contempt for the many institutions of modern liberal society. But there were no coherent economics, which brings us back to Trump's own views. He has no coherent plan, no view that can be mapped onto the common range of established discussion, whether left, right, or center. And this again, as the possibilities of A, a Deutsche Bank failure threatened the global economy, Deutsche Bank having been one of those too big to fail but not too big to heil institutions that was involved with the financial collapse that helped to bring about the financial collapse of 2008. It has a sum of derivatives on its books 11 times the size of the German economy, the largest economy in Europe, and there is discussion of the Fed and other central banks bailing out the Deutsche Bank. Donald Trump is hundreds of millions of dollars in debt to them. They've been his go-to bank of choice. So what happens from here with Trump making all sorts of statements about Janet Yellen and with the alt-right not even really acknowledging the validity of the Federal Reserve? Hold on to your hats and take a look at what is looming for the future. From the Huffington Post, September 30th, 2016, by Ed Mazza, virtually every alt-right Nazi is volunteering for the Trump campaign. It seems Donald Trump has united one group of voters, neo-Nazis. Trump had me at Build the Wall. Andrew Anglin, editor of the white supremacist website Daily Stormer, told the LA Times, virtually every alt-right Nazi I know is volunteering for the Trump campaign. The comments confirm reports from throughout the campaign season that white supremacists were mobilizing for the Republican presidential candidate and excited by his platform. Trump has picked up endorsements from leaders and publications in the neo-Nazi movement since early in his candidacy. Some members of the movement have even made robocalls on his behalf. And again, the chief mobilizer of the alt-right is Steve Bannon, his campaign manager. The real significance is that the Truppenkampfverbande, again, the underground right emerging into plain view and becoming, metamorphosing into a mass political movement, is that it is not going away. There has been a fair amount of publicity, and I will put links in the description, to Trump obliquely suggesting that gun owners might want to kill Hillary Clinton, and he has also overtly called for his supporters to show up at polls on Election Day, where many of them can be expected to harass minority voters. But there's more than that. Talking Points Memo Editor's Blog from October 12th of 2016, Danger on November 9th by Josh Marshall. Skipping down. I've been wanting to say this, but so much has been happening, it keeps getting pushed back to the next day or the next post. Quite simply, everybody needs to be paying close attention to what happens on November 9th. And he's talking about Donald Trump has been for months pushing the idea that the election may be stolen from him by some mix of voter fraud or systemic election rigging by persons unknown. And what the article goes on to point out is that Trump is basically already discrediting the validity of the election itself, and there appears to be a more or less overt call for discrediting the election, possibly even taking violent steps against a person or persons perceived to be involved. Again, I expect a rash of leaderless resistance violence in the wake of a Trump defeat, if in fact he loses. And the real significance of the Trump and Kampf Verbande is that it will be going forward, maybe without the locker room talk that has eclipsed these more important issues. Note that November 9th is the German Day of Destiny. This concludes For the Record program number 927, the Trump and Kampf Verbande part 6, Locker Room Eclipse. This is being recorded on October 13th of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.